Today's episode is sponsored in part by Modern Mammals, creators of a new hair washing product for men. You can help support Based on a True Story when you use the code BOATSPODCAST at modernmammals.com for 10% off. I've really been enjoying their shampoo light bar as an alternative to traditional shampoo. And I know it's in the name, but honestly, when I first used it, I was surprised at just how light and airy it feels. It reminds me of using a bar of soap for your hair, except it's even better than that because if you're like me, you don't like the residue that some actual bars of soap leave behind. And the shampoo light bar is easy to wash out without leaving any residue behind. Modern Mammals also focuses on creating products that help you keep your hair's natural oils so it's not left feeling poofy and frizzy. Go to modernmammals.com and use code BOATSPODCAST for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code BOATSPODCAST. Don't forget to use the promo code BOATSPODCAST so they know I sent you. Thanks, Modern Mammals. Okay, let's start today's episode. Hello, and welcome to Based on a True Story, the podcast that compares your favorite Hollywood movies with history. Today, we're going to be doing something a little different, because we're going to be learning about the 2012 fantasy horror movie, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. To help us separate fact from fiction in the movie, we'll be chatting with Dr. Brian Dirk, who is an author, historian, and professor at Anderson University. Before we connect with Dr. Dirk, though, let's set up our game, Two Truths and a Lie. If you're new to the show, here's how it works. I'm about to say three things. Two of them are true, and that means one of them is a lie. Are you ready? Okay, here they are. Number one, Abraham Lincoln was almost involved in a sword fight. Number two, Abraham Lincoln really was a vampire hunter. Number three, after his death, some drunk Irish counterfeiters tried to steal Lincoln's body. Got him? Okay, now as you're listening to the story today, your challenge is to find the two facts scattered somewhere throughout the episode. And by a simple process of elimination, you'll be able to find out which one is a lie. And of course, we'll do a recap at the end of the episode to see how well you did. All right, now it's time to chat with Dr. Brian Dirk about the historical accuracy of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. All right, let's kick this off by addressing the elephant in the room, or in this case, the vampires in the movie. As a historian, what was your initial reaction to a movie about Lincoln and vampires?
Yeah, well, you know, when the movie came out in 2012, I've got students who are like, Dr. Dirk, this is so cool. They're going to make him into a vampire. And I'm like, okay, you know, I got to admit, I was just like, okay. What the heck, you know, I had never heard of the novels or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, my original reaction is, we're reaching for story ideas here, aren't we? And I honestly, I had no idea what exactly they were doing. I actually thought it was originally going to be some kind of black comedy or something like that. It sounded like that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, a real dark comedy type. I can see that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, obviously, there's the vampire aspect to it. But if you were to give this movie kind of a letter grade for historical accuracy, how would it do?
Other than the vampires.
I feel like for a movie like this, we have to just be like, okay, there's vampires, but the rest of it.
Yeah, well, but you know, the funny thing is, I actually like Googled just to see what would happen when I typed in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And there are serious websites to say, question, was Lincoln a vampire hunter? No, he was not. I was like, really, guys? We have to actually take this that seriously. You know? So, you know what? As I understand it, the author of the novel was also the producer of the show, so he oversaw the script. I got to give this guy credit. He did his homework. I mean, there's very little in here other than the vampires that he's making up out of whole cloth. I mean, most of the people are real people. Most of the events are real events. As a Lincoln scholar, it's kind of fun to watch it because you kind of go, oh, wow, check out what they're doing with their speed. I mean, that's kind of creepy, but whatever, you know. So, you know, at the end of the day, I was actually a little impressed with the homework he had done in actually looking up stuff that actually did exist.
I feel like, yeah, you have to have, okay, there's vampires, but then the rest of it has to have some believability to it. It sounds like they did a pretty good job considering.
Not bad. I mean, they even pulled in some relatively unknown people, like William Johnson, the primary black character, was a real person. He actually was Lincoln's valet, a man that he seems to have met in Springfield and brought with him to Washington, D.C. I mean, he's a real guy. And, of course, so was Joshua Speed. I mean, yeah, these were real people for the most part.
Well, if we dig into some of the details in the movie, it starts by kind of setting some context for what we're going to see. The date that we see on the movie is April 14th, 1865. We hear Lincoln's voiceover in the letter, and I actually jotted this down. I want to quote this from the movie because it was interesting to me just the way it's phrased. It says, quote, "History prefers legends to men. It prefers nobility to brutality, soaring speeches to quiet deeds. History remembers the battle and forgets the blood. Whatever history remembers of me, if it remembers anything at all, it shall be only a fraction of the truth. For whatever else I am a husband, a lawyer, a president, I shall always think of myself as a man who struggled against darkness. I leave in your trusted hands, my dear friend Henry, this record that begins when I was just a boy." That's the end quote. And then it goes to Pigeon Creek, Indiana in 1818. So we'll chat about kind of what happens there in a moment. But from a historical perspective, does this sound like a letter that Lincoln could have written? And with all the things that he did accomplish, did he always see himself as somebody who was struggling against darkness?
You know, it's plausible. Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, there were a lot of people that knew Lincoln who commented on his melancholy. There were some believed he tended to be a bit obsessive about dark things. His taste in poetry was quite dark. His taste in Shakespeare plays, he tended towards the kind of the bloody dark ones. You know, I mean, that's not implausible that he, especially after, say, around the mid 1850s. When, as if you study his speeches at the time, he sees the slave power conspiracy that seems to be overwhelming American democracy as a very dark thing. So, I could get on board with that. And in fact, when I was watching the film, I was listening to that monologue, because, you know, it opens up with him writing that, and actually a really beautifully filmed scene of him writing it in D.C. And I was like, you know, he didn't write that, but I could see it.
In that monologue where they refer to, you know, struggling against darkness, which of course the movie is referring to a very different type of darkness, but the way that it's written, that's why I wanted to ask about it, because there was a lot of dark things that were going on during that time. I mean, Civil War, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, and, you know, Lincoln's own struggles with the deaths of many of his loved ones. The level of dying during the Civil War made that whole period horribly dark. I mean, and, you know, I mean, when Lincoln was worried about the darkness and the evil that was slavery, and Lincoln never, ever said one kind thing about slavery, that was a darkness as well. And if you look at where the country was at in 1860, there was a genuine possibility that, as Lincoln put it, slavery could become national and freedom local. So, yep, absolutely, there's a lot of darkness. Absolutely.
You mentioned his name, and at the beginning of the movie, we see a young Abraham Lincoln trying to protect his friend, Will Johnson. He's being beaten. Will is being beaten and taken away by a slave trader, and Abraham intervenes, but then his father, Thomas Lincoln, gets involved and punches the guy who's whipping Will and Abraham, and then out comes Mr. Bartz, who apparently, we learned from the movie, Thomas Lincoln is working for to pay off some sort of a debt. And because Thomas Lincoln can't pay what he owes immediately, Mr. Bartz says, oh, there's other ways to collect the debt. And then later that we find out that, of course, Mr. Bartz is a vampire, comes to Lincoln's home and bites Abe's mother, and she gets sick and dies soon thereafter. And then the movie very briefly and very quickly just mentions that Thomas Lincoln dies 9 years later. And that's how the movie sets up that Abraham Lincoln doesn't have any parents, and he has this desire to become, well, a vampire hunter to seek vengeance. Is there any truth to those plot points that we see around Lincoln's parents and how they died?
Yeah, first of all, I guess I got to stop laughing whenever you say vampires. It's just, they're talking someone. But again, this is one of those examples of obviously the screenwriters and/or author looked into the genuine circumstances of Lincoln's early life. His mother did in fact die when he was quite young, of a poisoning, accidental poisoning from something called the milk sickness, where she drank a poisoned milk. There's a plant that a cow might eat that had a poison called Trematol in it, and she accidentally drank it along with about a dozen other people in the neighborhood, and then she spent a week dying. It's, to tell you the truth, the way she died was a lot worse than what was in the movie, you know? I mean, really bad, yeah. As far as his father is concerned, Thomas, I mean, yeah, he had debt, and he had financial problems, and, you know, he was... Thomas wasn't a bad man. He was just kind of hapless, you know, and he ended up stumbling into bad financial setups. But yeah, I mean, yeah, he did die 9 years later, although it was just a peaceful death. He died of disease in Illinois. So there's that. And they were taking some liberties with William Johnson. Yes, he did exist, but we don't think Lincoln knew him that far back. We think Lincoln met him in Springfield. We don't know how. You know, but there's that as well.
But so for, it sounds like the way that they died, at least the way the according to the movie portraying almost, you know, Mrs. Lincoln dying as much more of a shock and more of a, you know, unexpected death, as opposed to they don't even show how Thomas Lincoln dies. They just, oh, he dies 9 years later. So it's, but it sounds like in that way, at least they're sort of going down the same, the right path.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they really are. And you know, setting aside the elephant in the room, if you move the vampires out of the way, yeah, I mean, that was a very traumatic experience probably for Lincoln, although we don't have a lot of records that really tell us how he reacted. But the, but he lost his mother when he was very young, and that had to be. I thought the film did a nice job of portraying just the shock and the nastiness of death on the frontier in that time period.
As I'm recording this right now, on the other side of my door is my cat. He's always wherever I am as I'm working on the podcast. He watches all the movies with me, and he lets me know when it's time to stop working by sitting on my keyboard. I love the little guy. And as a pet owner, that means there are expenses like vet bills that can pop up, and sometimes that's unexpected. That's why I was happy to learn about today's sponsor, EarnIn, because they can help make sure that I've got the money to cover those unexpected vet bills. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Now you can join over 3.5 million customers. Get the peace of mind that comes with EarnIn. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in True Story under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. True Story under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Thanks, EarnIn.
Earlier, I mentioned the name Henry. It's in the opening monologue, and that's who Abe was writing the letter to, and the full name being Henry Sturgis. According to the movie, Henry is both a vampire seeking his own revenge against other vampires, but he's also a very good friend of Abraham Lincoln. Did Lincoln actually have any friends named Henry Sturgis?
You know, I couldn't think of anyone of that name, so I actually ended up digging around at some things. My guess, and I'd have to see what the author was thinking, but my guess is he's kind of a composite of several friends, possibly, of Lincoln's at that time. I kind of thought of Ward Hill Lambert, actually, who was a fellow lawyer, who, by the way, was subject of his own movie about Lincoln, about him acting as his body. There's always movies about Lincoln. But my guess is this is a modification of Lamon, who was a lifelong friend of Lincoln's, if I had to guess.
Okay, yeah, because in the movie, Henry is kind of Abe's mentor. So would he have been Lincoln's mentor in real life, Lamon?
Well, not really. Yeah, I think the movie kind of had to make that relationship look the way it did for the vampire plot. Lincoln had men you could call mentors. There were a couple of older men living in the village he lived in growing up that kind of gave books and loaned him things and taught him things. And then there were a couple of older lawyers on the circuit who acted as mentors. So again, my guess is that this Henry is kind of a composite of all of that, you know, men who were showing this guy the way. That's my guess.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Now, in the movie, once Henry starts training Abe to kill vampires, Abe picks up his weapon of choice. He says he was never good with, as the movie says, you know, quote, shooting irons, or, but he was a rail splitter, so he picks up an axe. Is there any historical reason why Lincoln would pick up an axe as a weapon of choice?
Well, actually, there kind of is. When he was a small boy, Lincoln was, they were living in like a kind of a really, really primitive cabin in Indiana while they were establishing more permanent quarters. And his dad and his cousin named John Hanks were out hunting. And there was a big wild turkey that flew by the cabin. It was just him and his mother. And I think he's really young. I mean, he's like, I forget the exact age, like 7 or 8. And his mom thinks, oh man, there's dinner. Okay. So she hands a gun to Lincoln. He gets up and draws a bead and kills the turkey and hits it. And Lincoln actually later expressed something to the effect of, I accidentally hit the darn thing and killed it. And then he literally brags in one of his autobiographies, I've never pulled the trigger again on any such game. So that's apparently the last time he actually shot at something live. You know, so there's something to that. I mean, he doesn't seem to have owned any guns that I know of, nor was he into that kind of shooting thing. I found that rather plausible. He seems not to have liked hunting at all. And the one time he almost got himself into a duel was with swords, not guns. So I can kind of see it.
I this is not shown in the movie at all, but how do you get into a duel with swords? I don't remember that story from Lincoln.
Well, one of the best. Lincoln, and we think this was actually Barry Lincoln, who wrote these really nasty political letters to a local Springfield newspaper about a guy named James Speed. Or not James Speed, I'm sorry, James Shields. And James Shields got really mad and threatened the editor about finding out about it. And we think that Lincoln stepped up to protect Mary. And they got into a back and forth to the point where they were gonna have a duel. I mean they were at that point, and Lincoln was in the position where he got to choose the weapons, and he chose broadswords. If you can imagine Abraham Lincoln as like Aragorn, going at somebody, you know, but they weren't gonna do it. They were actually gonna do it. And Lincoln was practicing and all that, and then kind of cooler heads prevailed, and it never actually happened. And Lincoln found the whole thing really embarrassing. And when a Union officer brought it up during the war and said, "Hey, Mr. President, I heard you once got into a duel," Lincoln said something to the effect of, "Yeah, I need to shut up, or we're going to have a real problem here." It really bothered.
You mentioned that he was training for the duel, and that kind of leads right into my next question, because we see the sequence of Lincoln training with the axe. Did he do fighting training like that?
Pretty sweet, too. I mean, I got to tell you, I was like, oh, wow, that looks pretty cool. You know, yeah. in real life, Lincoln was an accomplished wrestler, a very good one. And most of the eyewitness accounts that saw him, most of them say he's very athletic.
But if we go back to the movie, we mentioned him before, Lincoln gets a room with a man named Speed in Springfield in exchange for Lincoln helping around Speed's store. And that's where, according to the movie, Lincoln meets Mary Todd for the first time. Is that really how Mary Todd and Abraham Lincoln really met?
We honestly don't know exactly how they met. It's certainly plausible. There are stories. My favorite story, and we're not sure if this is true or not, is that they met at a dance in Springfield where Lincoln's standing in the corner looking all nervous. And Mary walks over and says, "Who are you and what do you want?" And he says, "I want to dance with you in the worst way." And they go and dance, they get done. And Mary says to him, "Hey, you know what? We did dance the worst way." Boom, boom, boom. You know, my students love that little anecdote, you know. But honestly, it's plausible. You know, this is a good example of a fiction writer finding one of those empty spaces in the record where you could fill in something that certainly could have happened, possibly, because Mary was living in Springfield.
What about Speed? Was that how Lincoln met Speed, since you mentioned he was a real person?
That was actually one of the more accurate scenes. In real life, Lincoln had relocated from New Salem to Springfield. He had just gotten his law license, but he was getting out of New Salem, this village that was already dying because of various problems. He goes to Springfield. He's got very little money. He just sort of wanders into Speed's store, said pretty much what the movie said. And Speed offers him a room and he moves in. So yeah, it actually is pretty much likely how they met.
Huh. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating. there is a scene in the movie where Abe tells Mary that every night he hunts vampires. And then she just laughs it off, of course, you know, it makes a joke that maybe Abe isn't so honest after all. As I was watching that, it actually made me think of a different movie completely. It's something where Alfred says to Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins, Alfred tells Bruce that he's going to have to come up with some sort of a public excuse for why he's getting all these cuts and bruises so no one suspects that he's Batman. Now, if we were to go along with the concept in the movie that Abraham Lincoln was moonlighting as a vampire hunter, do we know if the real Abraham Lincoln ever had any sort of unexplained cuts, bruises, or anything else that he tried to keep out of the public eye?
Boy, you know, I that's a great question. I've never heard of anything like that myself. Now, I do know that when he was young, he was kicked in the head by a horse. And he later said, I was killed for a time. Apparently, it knocked him out cold. And if you look closely at, I've got in my office a life mask that was actually made Lincoln. You can kind of see where that little dent is at, where this horse whacked him real good, you know. But, you know, otherwise, you know, he was thought of as a remarkably athletic president. I mean, you know, first of all, he wasn't that old. I mean, he was 56. I'm 56, so it doesn't strike me as old as all, you know, but he was actually, when he was laying in his deathbed, basically, after he'd been shot, and they undressed him to look for more wounds and stuff, several people remarked on how athletic he looked and how basically toned and ripped his body was.
Well, I guess, you know, I've seen those pictures of, you know, when he became president and then after, I guess he just, I mean, he seemed to have aged a lot because, I mean, he went through a lot. I mean, there was a lot of stress.
God knows. You know, who would ever want to be president? That job kills people. If you look at the before, I mean, I'm for real, you know? So yeah. I mean, he looks much older, but they said that he was very physically fit all the way up to the day he died.
There's another scene in the movie I want to ask you about with Mary Todd. And she takes off Abe's top hat at one point and stands on it so that she's tall enough to kiss him. What about their height difference? Did she ever, I mean, at first that top hat had to have been pretty supportive to be able to support somebody standing on it. But you know, did it have that height difference?
God, yes. Lincoln is, what, 6'3"? And I think, I mean, my memory is fuzzy. I think she was like 5'2", okay. And as a matter of fact, when they were doing the train was traveling from Springfield, Illinois to Washington, D.C. to become president. He would bring Mary out onto the back of the train and he would tell the crowd, now you get to see the long and the short of it. You know, I mean, okay, yeah, whatever, you know. So yeah, apparently there people remarked upon, they were just an odd couple that way.
And he, but at least they had a good sense of humor about it, it sounds like.
Yeah. I hope Mary cracked a joke about that. So who knows?
Well, according to the movie, one night after finding out that Henry Sturgis is a vampire, Abe heads back to the shop where he works to find Mary. They're looking for him and he proposes to her right there in the shop. Is that really how Abraham Lincoln proposed to Mary Todd?
Well, there's a story of it. No, not at all. Basically, he had been keeping company with her. And back in those days, this is going to scare the heck out of every male listener to your podcast. If you spend more than 3 or 4 dates out with a woman, you better start printing the invitations, okay? Because you made a commitment. And somebody pointed that out to Abe. They said, okay, when do you guys get married? And then Lincoln's like, are you going to be fine? So he goes over to her, she's living with her sister, and he goes over to her house. And we don't know what they said, But it was something to the effect that Mary, it ain't going to happen. And Mary being Mary, she didn't take that well. Okay. And apparently he ran out of the house, had what amounted to an emotional collapse for the next few days. Speed later claimed, quote, "We had to take sharp things out of the room to fear that he hurt himself," that kind of stuff. And then after a few days, Speed says, he goes to Abe, and Abe kind of sighs and says, "Well, Speed, I guess I'm just going to have to marry that girl." There's a lot of matrimonial enthusiasm there, let me tell you. And then he goes back to the house, and from, we don't know the details, but from what we understand, Mary's sister, Elizabeth, who Lincoln also knew, kind of affected a reconciliation, kind of brought them together and said, "Come on, guys, let's just deal with this." So he must have proposed to her somewhere in there, but it wasn't anything like what the movie was pointing out.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds real enthusiastic about it.
Yeah. Well, one story has it that, and this may or may not be true, but one story has it that he was on his way to his wedding. They got married in Elizabeth's house, and he's all dressed up, and he's hardly dressed up. And one of his friends sees him all dressed up, and he goes to Lincoln and he says, "Geez, Abe, why are you dressed? Where are you going?" According to this guy, he said, "To hell, I suppose." And I was like, whoa, you know, but now that may not be true, but I love that story. So.
Wow. Wow. The movie suggests that one of the reasons why Abe gets into politics to take on slavery is not necessarily for how evil slavery is, but because it's what the vampires are using to feed their hordes and slowly take over the country. And then he decides to put down the axe, not fight with the axe, but fight with words and ideals. What were the reasons that Lincoln actually wanted to get into politics, if not vampires?
That's a good question. Boy, we only have an hour here. What the heck? Wow. You know what? It's like I always tell my students. There's never any one reason for anything in history. You know. Part of it is just personal ambition. His law partner Billy Herndon later said Lincoln's quote, "Ambition was an engine that knew no rest." I mean, he's much more ambitious than maybe. We have this aw shucks rail splitter image of the guy, but he's actually a shrewd lawyer who wants a political career. Now, it didn't go all that well, comparatively speaking, until he became president, but part of it's ambition. Part of it is moral conviction. He later himself, he got out of politics for a while. He had not done well when he went to the one term in Congress, comes home and says, "To heck with this," focuses on his family, focuses on his law practice. And he later said this himself. He said, "I was done. I was retired. Until I heard the news that they were planning on reintroducing slavery into the Western territories, and I was so shocked I had to get involved." So there's moral conviction to get back involved in slavery. So I'd say those two things kind of go hand in hand. He genuinely feared that slavery, which he was convinced was on its way to extinction, had been given new life by people like Stephen Douglas, and he was really mad about it.
Okay, so slavery did play a big part into his other than just, you know, his own ambitions.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We talked about Abe's mother and how she died. And there's a scene in the movie where one of the vampires gets into the Lincoln household. They're in the White House, so he's president then. And the vampire bites Willie. And then he gets sick and the doctors are befuddled. They don't know what's ailing him. But he looks and he immediately recognizes the wound on the arm as the same thing that happened to his mother. How did the movie do showing the way that William Lincoln died?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously he wasn't bitten by a vampire, okay? Again, it's like the entire movie. They just sort of pick and choose kernels of truth and build their narrative around it. And in fact, Abraham Lincoln was one of only two presidents to lose a child in the White House. The other, if you're wondering, was JFK. Jackie had a miscarriage so there's that. Willie did genuinely die in the White House in 1862, as a matter of fact, we're not entirely sure how he died. The best theory is, typhoid, that he drank some tainted water. And by the way, his little brother, Tad, who doesn't even show up in the movie, and he had two young boys living in the White House. The other one was Tad. Tad got sick too, and he almost died. But Willie did die. And I thought he did a passable job with the grief. Mary was shattered, much more so than she was in the movie. The movie shows her, quite upset, In real life, Mary teetered on the edge of insanity. She was so upset. As a matter of fact, Lincoln had to threaten to put her in the Washington, D.C. lunatic asylum if she didn't calm down. It was that bad. And the people that knew Lincoln knew that he was shaky as well. So they didn't do a bad job with that, actually. Other than the
vampires. Well, other than the vampires, yeah. Well, it sounds like the movie kind of has a correlation between the way that William died and the way that Abe's mother died. And it sounds like Abe's mother really died by tainted milk and then tainted water. It sounds like there was some sort of a correlation almost.
Hard to get a sexy action movie out of dying from tainted milk and tainted water, though, right?
Well, in the movie, after William dies, Abe refuses to let Henry turn William into a vampire to save him, even though Mary wants him to. And then she apparently read Abe's secret journal, so she knows what's really going on. And according to the movie, then she blames Abe for William's death. Did she really blame her husband for William's death?
Yeah, boy, you know, right offhand, and I've read a whole book on Lincoln and dying, and I've seen most of the reliable sources on this. I've never seen anything like that. Mary blamed herself, actually. She seems to have felt that, because Willie lingered for a long time before he died. He was sick. And you get better, then you get worse, and you get better, then you get worse. And the Lincolns didn't know what to do. Sometimes they canceled appointments, sometimes they didn't, because after all, he is president, and they got to do what they got to do. But after he died, Mary writes in a letter, she's like, I think we were too ambitious, and I should have stayed closer to him. Oh my God, what was I thinking? And she actually gave sort of a religious, you know, God is punishing us for our pride. But it wasn't particularly pointing the finger at her husband. It was more like a general, hey, you know what, we should have seen that he was much worse off than he actually was, and she beat herself up over that.
I could see that with any sort of a loss, those scenes just start to replay in your head, and it sounds like
I'm more sympathetic to Mary than many people, and I've got to tell you, my favorite part of this movie was Mary. You know, of the whole thing, I thought it did within the context of the whole vampire story, I like what they did with her. She wasn't, I mean, other movies have her like teetering on the balance of insanity, the entire thing. I don't know. I do think she did descend into some major mental instability eventually, but I like what they did with her.
Well, near the end of the movie, the entire war tilts on the balance of Gettysburg. And after a disastrous first day where the vampires enter the war on the side of the Confederacy, they just, you know, roll over everybody. Then Abe sends a train full of course, they're vampires, so silver-plated weapons. Unfortunately, Speed gave up the location of the train, so a fight ensues. And then our heroic vampire hunter, Abraham Lincoln, fights off the vampires, so the train makes it to the destination, saves the day, and the nation. Was there ever a moment like this where the entire war hung in the balance and Abraham Lincoln himself saved the day?
No, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, while you're at it, the battle scenes from Gettysburg were pretty cool. I think they did a really nice job. But that one opening scene of Gettysburg, I was thinking, man, you know what? I could crib this and use this in my class. Then they morph into vampires. I go, oh, well, mine, you know. But as an historian who studies this stuff, like most historians, I don't see like one pivotal moment, even at Gettysburg. Gettysburg is important, okay, but the history doesn't work that way. This is a process, you know. Frankly, what I think they did, I've not read the novel again. I don't know what they did in the novel, but in a movie, you got to tell a story in a very short period of time. If you're going to have a climactic moment that makes sense, I can't think of any other climactic moment you would do. So I see it from a storytelling point of view, but in reality, it was much messier than that.
That makes sense. And yeah, in the movie, they don't really show a lot of the actual battles of in the war. It's just,
well, just snippets. Yeah,
just little snippets. Gettysburg is the one that we see the most of. And it sounds like, other than the vampires, that's always going to be the catch.
Well, like I said, I mean, I actually liked those scenes. I was like, man, they put some work into this, you know? I mean, I actually thought they did a pretty decent job with that.
the way the movie wraps up, the train that Abe is on is a decoy. And there's a brief scene earlier in the movie after fighting off a ballroom filled with vampires to rescue his friend Will. Abe and Speed make their way back north thanks to Harriet Tubman. Then we see Mary Lincoln meet with Harriet Tubman again as she's trying to get out of Washington. At the very end of the movie, we find out, as Will puts it, the train isn't the only railroad. And so as moviegoers, we can put two and two together that Lincoln used Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad to deliver the silver to turn around the Battle of Gettysburg and, of course, by extension, the war. Did the Lincolns ever meet Harriet Tubman or use the Underground Railroad to deliver weapons?
No to both. Okay. Actually, Lincoln did meet several prominent leaders in the abolitionist movement. Most famously, he met Frederick Douglass three separate occasions. He met Sojourner Truth, who was another African-American woman abolitionist. Harriet Tubman, she never met him. As a matter of fact, Harriet Tubman was not a Lincoln fan. She thought that Lincoln waited too long before he issued the Emancipation Proclamation, and she was highly suspect of his motives. She thought that he was doing it mostly to get, you know, black men to serve as cannon fodder. So she didn't have a positive view of Lincoln at all. And as far as Underground Railroad is concerned, you know, the Underground Railroad, while very important and very interesting, can be exaggerated. And plus, it's really, really tough to track down sources because, after all, helping a fugitive slave up until 1863 was a federal felony. So you don't go writing down records, you know, about this. I've never seen, maybe there's something out there somewhere, but I've never seen a reliable source in which Lincoln even really acknowledges the existence of the Underground Railroad. Now, as a lawyer, he did defend several people who were accused of breaking the law by helping slaves to their freedom. So he did get involved that way. But other than that, not really, no.
But that would have been as a lawyer before he got into politics, right?
Or waiting for the war, yeah. During the war, I'm just, you know, using my adult 56-year-old memory here. Maybe there's a reference someplace in the records where he mentions the Underground Railroad, but if there is, I don't remember it right offhand.
I want to ask about one of the kind of the concepts that the movie has. Of course, again, the movie's using vampires supporting the Confederate, but as I was watching that, I couldn't help but think of there's, you know, modern day conspiracy theories about how there are secret groups controlling political and military agendas. And so the movie using vampires to do this, but of course, I'm just curious, were there any sort of conspiracies or anything of any sort of controlling group behind the Confederacy that was using this political and military for their own purposes?
I'll tell you what, go find Crazy Uncle Ed's YouTube channel. And I'm sure he's got a theory. Okay. You know, I mean, yeah, it was all those guys, you know, that kind of thing. The Confederacy was a messy coalition of, you know, diehard slaveholders, others who were slaveholders, but they really wanted independence more. And there was much more opposition to the Confederacy than we are led to believe. If you go look at the actual records of 4 years during the war, there's tons of Southerners think this is a terrible idea, especially poorer Southerners who had to bear the brunt of the fighting. In fact, you can make a pretty good case that Confederate nationalism wasn't even viable during the war. And I mean, you can get into a real argument about this, but there's an argument to be made that Confederate nationalism was so weak that contributed to their collapse. People just weren't committed to the cause. So not only was there not some kind of conspiracy, even upfront Confederates didn't know what exactly they were trying to do sometimes. Absolutely.
Well, so that leads to a question then I have about the goal in the movie. Again, they're vampires, but they want to take over the entire country. It sounds like, did the Confederacy want to take over the entire country, or they just essentially want to keep the territories that they had and what they had? Status quo, essentially.
You know, I gotta be, I was watching this movie, I was thinking in the back of my head, God, it sucks being a Confederate these days, doesn't it? They pull down your statues, they accuse you of doing all kinds of bad crap, you know? It's not fun being Confederate in 2022. But yeah, not really, no. The Confederacy, now I'm talking Confederacy, now pre-war South, that's a different story. You could find people who were making arguments for making slavery a national institution, but they weren't very large in number, and even most mainstream Southerners thought that's nuts. Okay. The Confederacy itself, I mean, Jefferson Davis says from the very beginning of the war, he says, we just want to be left alone. In his first inaugural address, he says, look, we can be friends here. Why don't we start setting up trade relations like we're two sovereign countries, which we are? As a matter of fact, it was highly controversial that Robert E. Lee invaded the North twice, for the Battle of Antietam in Maryland. He was trying to get to Pennsylvania and then again in Gettysburg, because a lot of people were saying, look, we're not into trying to invade the North, okay? We're just trying to be left alone. So there was never a serious consideration that, hey, man, we want to go take over this whole bloody thing, you know? As a matter of fact, if anything, a lot of Confederates really wanted to go the other direction, establish their nation, and then go conquer Cuba and go conquer the Bahamas and go conquer parts of Central America and turn that into a vast slave empire. But they wanted to go that way, not that way, you know, down, not up. So
in that sequence at the end, Abraham Lincoln had a silver tipped axe doubled as a shotgun in the handle. Was that sort of technology even possible in that time period?
I never heard of that. I thought that's a cool idea. I got to patent that sucker, you know, I mean.
It seemed like something from like a spy museum.
Yeah, you know, you see weird weapons from the Civil War. Like I saw a picture one time of a Confederate soldier holding a single shot Derringer with a bayonet attached to the bottom of the barrel. Like, dude, what are you going to do with that? You know, I mean, you're going to stab somebody with a pistol. You know, I mean, you thought.
I was going to say, Derringer's a pistol, right? Unless they.
Yeah, it was a pistol with a bayonet. It's like, what do you think you're going to do with that? You know, so no, but you know, you never know. I mean, they had just all kinds of weird ideas back then about, hey, we could win war for you. I don't know, attach a shotgun to an axe handle. Oh boy, you know, that kind of thing. So you might be surprised. There might've been somebody out there that came up with some crazy idea. I mean, look what that, I mean, the Confederacy built a submarine, for heaven's sake, and the sucker actually worked, well, sort of, until it killed everybody in it. But still, you know, at the end of the day, though, they especially the Confederacy got desperate, you know, and were starting to come up with all kinds of crazy ideas.
This isn't shown in the movie at all, but at the very end of the book, I read the book, you know, a while ago, and we find out that at the end, Henry actually turned Lincoln into a vampire so that they can continue to fight evil together. And so the end of the book is kind of like modern day, and they're both there. Were there any theories that Lincoln didn't actually die after being shot by Booth? Like the movie kind of suggests it too.
Yeah, well, yeah, the whole bar scene. And I haven't read the novel, but I did read that they had him listen to the I Have a Dream speech as a vampire in 1963 or whatever. I don't know of any rumors that Lincoln survived. Most of the, you know, cray-cray rumors about Lincoln centered around Booth. And there were all these rumors going well into the 20th century that he actually wasn't shot in that barn, you know, later, which, you know, he was shot by a guy named Walter Corbett and surrounded and all that. You can find those today, man. There's these rumors that he actually died on a barroom floor in Texas in 1902 or stuff. Most serious historians dismiss that stuff out of hand. And of course, there are all these assassination theories back then. My personal favorite is that the Pope offed Lincoln because he's mad about something. I kind of like that one myself, you know, but oh yeah. Go look it up. There are all kinds of funky conspiracy theories about the Lincoln assassination. But as far as I never saw anybody claiming that he actually lived. I think too many eyewitnesses. I'll tell you what, if you wanted to go dig Lincoln up and turn him into a vampire, good luck with that, because somebody tried to steal his body out of the crypt in Springfield after the war was over, and Robert Lincoln was so upset, he had Lincoln's body interred, stuck in a coffin that was wrapped in rebar, and stuffed about 20 feet in the ground in concrete floor. You will never get to the corpse of Abraham Lincoln the way that turned out.
What were they trying to steal? Were there some sort of a political thing?
This is the best story. These drunk Irish counterfeiters in Chicago wanted to get their engraver out of jail. So I guess after they downed some major Guinness, decided, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down to Springfield. We're going to steal Lincoln's body, hide it in the Indiana dunes, and then ransom our bud getting out of jail. Oh, by the way, can we get some money while we're at it? And they actually tried it. They went into the, there was no guard around the sarcophagus, which was in the middle of Oakdale Cemetery. They go in, they start pulling the coffin out, but they didn't realize that it was a coffin inside another coffin with all this charlatan. It weighed like 400 pounds. God, this thing's really heavy. And then the detectives went in and busted him for it. And there's Lincoln hanging half in, half out of the sarcophagus. And Robert Lincoln just went DEFCON 1, man. So how are you ever going to keep this from happening again? To make him happy, they buried him so far down that we'll never get him out. So, yeah.
Wow, I've never heard that. That's crazy.
Like, anyone, dude, if they ever make a movie about that, I will totally come back on this again, okay? That's actually a thing. It actually is.
Wow.
Yeah. I tell my students that, they're like open mouth. They're like, oh, God, y'all, I'm not making this up. I swear it happened.
Wow. I mean, you hear of grave robbers and things, you know, they're stealing the valuable. You think of, especially, you know, ancient Egypt and stuff, the gold.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is those guys didn't spend that much time in jail, because at the end of the day, the only thing they could be prosecuted under was a law keeping people from stealing cadavers and selling them to hospitals and stuff for medical research. I mean, that's the only law they had back then. So I think these guys spent like a little bit of time in jail and left when they got out again. So it really wasn't that big a deal, except that Robert Lincoln went nuts, you know?
I have a feeling there were some new laws that got added after that.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, and then they were so worried that somebody would come try it again. They didn't want to put his body back in the sarcophagus. So they figured out what to do. So they took the coffin back out, moved Lincoln's body to the basement of the sarcophagus and piled a bunch of lumber on top of it and hid it down there. So for the next quite some time, tour groups would come in and the tour guide would point to the sarcophagus and say, there's the body of Abraham Lincoln, when he was actually buried under a bunch of lumber, like two stories down.
Wow. We've talked about a lot, obviously, the vampire, the elephant in the room there. But is there anything in the movie that you felt you watching like, oh, that was spot on? Like, this is incredibly accurate.
Bits and pieces, you know, the production values were really good. You know, I mean, I was impressed. The scene where they used CGI fairly well, I thought, where they panned in on his first inaugural address, and there is the Capitol dome, which is half built, which is the truth. They hadn't put the dome wasn't finished when he gave the thing. I mean, they had an eye for detail for that. That scene is awesome. It's just like, wow, that's really cool. And then Lincoln's Gettysburg Address was spot on. I mean, it's probably about what the whole thing looked like. I mean, so it's like bits and pieces. You kind of go, huh, not bad. Over you, I would have expected worse than this, you know. But that's the whole thing about the movie, though. I was expecting a campy comedy at first. Okay, I was like, it's gonna be like the Batman series on TV in the 1960s, all the crack jokes about Adam West. And then this is like this deadly, serious movie about all this stuff. And I thought, what the heck was that? You know, it's like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, I mean, it's not funny. It's not, there's not a single funny thing in this movie. On the other hand, the visuals are really nice and the acting is actually quite good. And all the production values are great. And the surface of the story is just weird, you know? So there it is.
It's different.
You know what? I actually read some of the reviews. It only has like a 34% on Rotten Tomatoes. And people look at the reviews, they all kind of do the same thing. They're like, why was this even made? You know, why? What am I supposed to walk out of the theater thinking here? Okay.
The author that wrote that, I know he also wrote like another one called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So it's kind of his thing, it seems like.
Hey, you know what? If you're a writer and find your niche, man, you go for it, okay? You
know? Well, thank you so much for coming on to chat about Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. And for someone listening to this who wants to learn more about your work, can you share a bit about your books and where they can get them?
I've written several books about Abraham Lincoln. The one I'm most well-known for, I suppose, insofar as I'm known at all, is Lincoln the Lawyer, which is a study of his law practice. I've done works on various aspects of his life. The most recent one, which is kind of related to what we were talking about a little bit, it's called The Black Heavens, Abraham Lincoln and Death. And I kind of look at how Lincoln processed death throughout his life, from the death of his mother, like we talked about, all the way through how he dealt with, you know, all the death of surrounding him during the war. Funny thing, when I wrote the book, it didn't occur to me to include, you know, silver tipped axes and people biting him in the neck. But you know what? If there's ever a second edition, man, I'm going to go do that vampire thing, because this is awesome.
Wait, you're saying Lincoln didn't actually process death by just turning people into vampires, or that wasn't his thing?
In retrospect, it would have been a strategy. You know, it would have been a strategy. I can see it. I can see it.
They live forever, so.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Thank you again so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man.
This episode of Based on a True Story was produced by me, Dan Lefebvre. I'd like to thank Dr. Brian Dirk for sharing his expertise about the historical accuracy of 2012's Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. If you want to learn even more about the real Abraham Lincoln, check out Dr. Dirk's great books, including his most recent one, The Black Heavens, Lincoln and Death. As always, you can find links to his books in the show notes for this episode, as well as on the show's home on the web, basedonatruestorypodcast.com. Okay, now it's time for the answer to our two truths and a lie game from the beginning of the episode. And as a refresher, here are the two truths and one lie. Number one, Abraham Lincoln was almost involved in a sword fight. Number two, Abraham Lincoln really was a vampire hunter. Number three, after his death, some drunk Irish counterfeiters tried to steal Lincoln's body. Did you find out which one is a lie? Let's start with number one. Abraham Lincoln was almost involved in a sword fight. That is true. As Dr. Dirk explained, Lincoln almost had a duel with a man named James Shields. And the weapon that Lincoln picked for the duel was broadswords. Even though Lincoln trained with a sword for the duel, fortunately, it didn't happen. That brings us to number two. Abraham Lincoln really was a vampire hunter. That's the lie. Despite the premise of the movie, as we learned throughout this episode, Abraham Lincoln was not a vampire hunter, even though, as Dr. Dirk pointed out, there are reviews of the movie out there asking that very question. So, no, he was not a vampire hunter. That means number three is also true. After his death, some drunk Irish counterfeiters tried to steal Lincoln's body. Dr. Dirk shared the crazy story of how some drunk Irish counterfeiters in Chicago wanted to get their engraver out of jail, so they thought they could steal Lincoln's body and use it as ransom to get their friend out of jail. Last but not least, it's time now to let you know how long it took to create this episode. If you're a longtime listener to the podcast, you'll know I like to share this information just to help you appreciate all the podcasts that you listen to. After all, a huge majority of podcasts are, like mine, completely free to listen to. But that does not mean they're free to create. Quite the opposite. They can cost a lot of money, but almost every podcast out there, even if it doesn't cost a lot of money, it costs a lot of time. The time it takes to learn the technical side, to research each episode, to record them, to edit them, and so on. I only have the stats for my own show. So with that in mind, today's episode took me 25 hours to create. And to make it clear, that is only my time. Dr. Dirk has spent years researching and gathering his expertise on Lincoln. So obviously it does not include any of that time. And to be more specific, that isn't even all of my time, because that 25 hours is only the time it took for me to produce this one episode. It does not include all the time that I spent building and maintaining the Based on a True Story website, finding new guests, scheduling, and the logistics of all that, the email newsletter, social media, and all those other things that don't really have anything to do with making today's episode, but they're still required to make the podcast overall. In a nutshell, this podcast may be free to listen to, but it is not free to create. And that's why I'm so thankful for the sponsors whose ads you've heard in this episode. You can find more information about them over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/advertisers. But they're not the only ones helping to keep the show alive. There are wonderful people just like you who are helping to keep this show financially going. So if you found value in today's episode, and if you're using a Podcast 2.0 app, you can boost now. Otherwise, if you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you enjoyed it enough to share it with a friend. And maybe even consider help to support the next episode over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/support. Once again, that's basedonatruestorypodcast.com/support. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, and I'll chat with you again really soon.